Welcome to This Is Money podcast in partnership with NSNI, your weekly roundup of the top personal finance, consumer and business stories that editor Simon Lambert and his team have been covering on their award-winning website. I'm your host, Georgie Frost. Alongside Simon Nye is personal finance editor Rachel Rickard-Strauss. And it's not often you can say a budget might come as welcome relief, but after months of political turmoil, perhaps it's time now for some of that strong and stable leadership we were promised from the Conservative Party. What will spreadsheet Phil have in store when he steps up to the dispatch box next week? From the high earners to the jams, from business to Brexit, Simon and Rachel have a big task ahead, assessing both the political and economic landscape, as well as indulging in a bit of crystal ball gazing. Don't forget you can stay up to date with all the latest breaking money news. Just go to thisismoney.co.uk or download the app.
This is Money, brought to you in partnership with NS&I, giving you 100% security for your savings, backed by HM Treasury.
But first, what is the state of the nation to which the Chancellor will announce his budget, politically and economically? I thought I'd start with the easier one of the two, money. We've had an interest rate rise, inflation while below the 3.1% expected. It's 3% still, so showing the squeeze on household incomes. Productivity is still puzzling us, and retail figures were down ahead of the key Christmas period. Put it all together, give it a bit of a shake, and Simon, what does it tell us about the state of the British economy? Will the Chancellor be in a giving mood? What even does he have to work with?
Well, the Chancellor finds himself in this slightly awkward position by which the party of which he is Chancellor still has a commitment to austerity and balancing the books. And they've pushed that commitment out. So they previously were going to balance them a bit earlier. And actually, to be fair, we've been doing quite a good job at trimming the deficit, to the point now where there was actually the suggestion last week that we've trimmed it too far, that actually we could afford to continually be a bit more in deficit. So just to explain the deficit and debt thing, the deficit is by how much more we spend more than we take in each year, and the debt is the total pile of money that we owe. The debt isn't going down particularly quickly, and is not going to go down particularly quickly. The deficit, the balancing the books on a yearly basis, is the thing that you can get down quicker. Now, Philip Hammond is obviously not George Osborne, who was the man who had made that original promise. Yeah. And Philip Hammond has already pushed it out. But if Philip Hammond was going to go on a bit of a splurge, the time to go on a bit of a splurge would have been just after the Brexit vote. And that's what people thought that he was going to do. And in the end, he didn't. We saw the Bank of England.
When you say a bit of a splurge.
Well, there was talk that what we were going to do is try and get some good growth going in this country by really spending on infrastructure, improving the things that we need to improve, and not necessarily things like multi-year plans to have high-speed trains up to other parts of the country, but the more simple stuff, the fixing the potholes, the fixing the roads, the stuff that if you do it, it puts money into the economy that instantly then goes into people's pockets, probably gets spent, could give growth a little bit of a boost. At the time, there was this suggestion that what we could do is we could just go around and pick off all those things that annoy us on a daily basis and don't quite work properly and spend some money on them. Mm-hmm. And we didn't do that. There was a few words bandied around about some things that we might do, but realistically there was a lot of re-announcing old stuff, and instead we decided to let the Bank of England do the heavy lifting with its interest rate cut and pumping some cheap money into the banks to lend out to people. But the problem with that is really all that does is stoke the housing market a little bit more, and we still find ourselves in the position where growth is okay but not great. GDP growth was 0.4% in the last quarter, which was slightly up from the 0.3% previously, but that's not, it's nothing spectacular. Inflation's at 3%, and that's to do with the effect of Brexit vote on the pound, and all of that stuff slowly filtering through. That is thought to potentially be peaking right now. It may have actually already peaked. I reckon it probably hasn't. It might notch up a little bit more and then fall away. Interest rates have gone up from 0.25% to 0.5% because the bank, I think, has thought it had to be seen to be doing something. Wages are still rising at a rate that's lower than inflation, and we still have a productivity puzzle, which means that rather than seeing the amount of stuff that we can produce per person, per day of work, per hour of work, per week of work, per year of work go up, it's been alarmingly stagnant for some time, and companies aren't really spending much money on investing into themselves in terms of buying new machinery or new equipment that can help boost productivity. And instead, they tend to be spending on the thing that's cheap, which is labour, unfortunately, people, because you can get rid of people very easily.
So in sum, teacher Lambert, if you were to give a score to the economy at the moment, what would you, sort of a B minus maybe, or a, you know, this has got nothing to do with credit ratings, by the way.
I think teacher Simon Lambert. Really, I think it's a C.
Oh dear.
I think it's a C. Yeah. I think that, you know, I think there's definitely, I think we could definitely do better.
Yeah.
I think it's only a C. And I think that we
must
try harder. Yep. Could do better. But I think that what we also need is perhaps some new ideas.
Okay. So that's the bigger picture, I suppose. Let's take it down a little bit to that pound in our pocket. What is the state of the nation's finances, household budgets?
I mean, the headline numbers look okay. Growth is pretty sluggish, but it's still growth, 0.4%, better than nothing. But I think most people listening and around the country will know that it's not the case in their own personal finances that things are all tickety-boo. The Bank of England has been saying for some time that a lot of the growth that we've seen has been based on consumer spending, and a lot of that out of debt rather than out of savings. So there's the debt issue, there's people on more precarious incomes is also an issue, even though the numbers look absolutely beautiful. Unemployment hasn't been this low since about 1970-something, and even then it was joint. So there are a lot of underlying problems which people are already experiencing. Pay freezes in the public sector as well for years now. And it'll only take a little jolt for things to get considerably worse. So that's the problem. While things seem, on the surface, quite placid, a lot is set up to snowball quickly.
Talking about consumer spending, we did get retail figures out for October. Lowest sales figures in 10 years, wasn't it? 5.2% down. So do you think that this is all linked? Or is it warm weather and coats that we're not buying?
That, I mean, this is what they'll always say, isn't it? And nothing quite follows the patterns that experts predict that they ought. So we're supposed to be feeling more nervous about Brexit. This is supposed to have impacted our spending months ago, but still people were going out and shopping, and still people are taking out more on debt. So I think it's too early to call it, really. Spending's a bit down, but it, you know, you have to compare it to the state that it was in last year, which is what it's been compared to. It was pretty robust. Yeah, it could be coats, weather, all sorts of things. Rubbish season of clothes, people not buying stuff or choosing to buy other things, or just generally feeling skint. Very hard to call it.
All right, then, now to the politics. We've got the economics out of the way. Now to the politics. I appreciate this is a money podcast, and you can get extensive coverage of the situation Mrs. May and the Conservatives find themselves in at the moment elsewhere, ad nauseum. But almost 6 months after a disastrous trip to the polls for Theresa May, strong and stable seems to be somewhat lacking in British politics at the moment. So it seems only right that we do take a little look at the impact this may have on the budget coming up. So just, Simon, briefly, how has the political landscape changed since the last budget, which wasn't too long ago?
The last budget, yes. Cast your mind back to those heady days of March. Well, the political landscape looked pretty different, actually. It looked good enough last March that shortly afterwards, in April, Theresa May decided to call a snap election because she thought that she was going to increase her majority. She didn't increase her majority, in case anybody has been spending the last 6 months with their head in the sand. And this has caused her all kinds of problems. It's caused her problems with the Brexit negotiations due to the balance between Brexiteers and Remainers and trying to keep both sides of that happy. It's caused her problems with the Brexit negotiations because now all of our chums over in the EU know that they can squeeze us that little bit harder because she's not clear she's weaker. And it's caused the party problems because they decided that maybe they now need to try to appeal to some of the people that they weren't trying to appeal to. So there's been this frantic scrabbling around. And what it means for the budget is that what the Conservatives need is for Philip Hammond to pull out an absolute blinder of a budget. Put a marker down that says, right, here you go. Here's the plan. here's some stuff I've identified that I think is a problem, and here are some solid, sensible ways of fixing them that's going to keep you happy and you happy, and I'm not going to pull any silly tricks. I'm not going to try and pull anything out of the bag that is just shuffling the deck chairs or grabbing money off people. What I'm going to do is I'm going to play a straight bat and I'm going to deliver a blind of a budget.
You said that.
So
he's
what
not
do you
Osborne.
Think's going to
well,
happen?
I was going to say, you said he's not Osborne, so we don't expect rabbits out of the hat. He has been called Spreadsheet Phil. But what is the likelihood of that even being possible? There's always going to be someone who's going to be disgruntled by some decision.
Well, the problem is, going back to what I said at the top of the podcast, is that he doesn't have any money to play with. Mm. So all that we've seen repeatedly is this shuffling of the deck chairs, just moving stuff around. Give a little bit here, but you take it back there. The attempt in the last budget was the tax rise, the national insurance rise on the self-employed, which backfired massively when it was pointed out that there was a manifesto pledge not to raise national insurance. And I think that the fear is that if they come out and say, well, look, we're just going to do this, we're going to give you this money, we're going to spend this money, they will be castigated because they're meant to be balancing the books. But I do think that we are now in the position where we appear to have just been going round in circles for many, many years. And I don't think we need to do anything particularly radically different, but we do need to come up with some new ideas and some fresh talent to deliver those new ideas, because I'm getting bored of it, to be perfectly honest.
There you go, Philip Hammond. Simon's getting bored. Do something about it. Is Philip Hammond, though, the right man to do it? And I concede budgets are pretty political anyway, and you are right, shuffling the deck chairs and the like. But do you think, Rachel, this is going to be more so than most?
A lot of people would say that he is only in this job because of that snap election, that Theresa May wanted him out. The suggestion was that she would have booted him out, but then when she found that she had such a weak majority and she had so little power, she wasn't really in a position to get rid of him. But now, the vultures are circling again. If she had the power to get rid of him now, who knows whether she would or not. And a lot of people are saying it's time for him to move over. We need some fresh ideas. And also they call him, you know, this doom conjurer. And perhaps they need someone more positive about the future in his position instead. So this is going to, I feel like I always say it, but here you go again. This is going to be the most difficult budget, because he loses credibility if he spends. He loses credibility if he doesn't do anything very interesting. He can't just shuffle around, as Simon says, existing money. And I mean, we talk about his job as if it's very convoluted and there are all these sort of tricks to it, but all it is taking money off us or spending money on other things and shuffling it round. And he really can't do either of those at the moment. We need to see something very exciting for him to keep his job, for the party to retain credibility, but that has to be done on no money. Or he does say, do you know what? I'd love to get our deficit down to 2% in the next couple of years. That'd be brilliant, but this is probably not the time to do it. Just spend a bit more on things that will get money back into the economy.
We'll get on to the things that are likely to come out of it, but you both said we need a bit of innovative thinking, something a little bit different. So, Chancellor Simon Lambert, now take off your teacher hat, you're going to be Chancellor. What on earth can be done given what Rachel's just said and what you've just said?
So I think that we should take a little bit of a lesson from some of this populism that's been going on recently, and maybe what the Chancellor should do is just identify a number of things that people are not happy about and then do something about them. It doesn't have to be a massive splurge of money, but it can just be, this is not right. And we think that actually the consequences of this not being right causes more problems down the line. So this is what we're going to do, and then we're not going to mess around with it. So pensions, for example, the constant tinkering with pension tax relief, the annual allowance, and then being dragged down for higher earners. It's all about taking money off higher earners. But the lifetime allowance, that is the real problem. This a cap on the amount that you can put into your pension. Just go, this is a problem, and it's causing problems through consequences, because people are then ploughing their money into other things. We don't think this is good. We're going to stop this, the lifetime allowance. We're going to get rid of that one. And we're not going to tinker with pensions. Stamp duty. Stamp duty is clearly an issue. It's actually not so much of an issue for the people who they're talking about giving a holiday to on stamp duty lower down the ladder, because actually, due to the changes that George Osborne made, for people who are first-time buyers, it's not that expensive anymore. But once you start buying increasingly expensive properties, then it starts becoming a problem. And that means that people aren't moving home. Because people aren't moving home, they're not selling their properties, and it helps drive up high house prices. So basically just say, we survived until 1997 with a 1% rate of stamp duty. We could probably continue to survive with much lower rates of stamp duty. I'm just going to cut stamp duty, because the problems with the high levels of stamp duty is it's causing unintended consequences further down the line. Student loans. The big problem here is we have got £9,000 a year tuition fees, and then we are applying an interest rate that is RPI inflation plus 3%. People shouldn't be paying that much money to go to university. We should be investing in education. And we also shouldn't be charging them a rate of interest that is much higher than almost anyone pays on their mortgage or even on a personal loan. So we're going to cut tuition fees. The government is going to put more money into the university system rather than trying to put less in. And we're going to lower the interest rate because it's causing problems further down the line. And finally, transport, trains and roads. It is not right that people are paying £4,000 a year to commute to work, £4,000 or £5,000 a year to commute to work. And one of the reasons why train fares are going up by so much is because people have no other choice other than to take the train to work. And the government has been trying to withdraw its subsidies. We're going to decide that the railways are a public good. All commuter trains are going to go into the local transport authority, be that TfL, be that Manchester, be that Birmingham. And if it's a commuter train, it's controlled by them. And at least it's then a not-for-profit organisation that reinvests into the railways, and maybe the long-distance trains can still be privatised, and the roads. Basically, they are an embarrassment. As someone who cycles to work every day, as someone who walks around with his eyes open, and as someone who drives a car, basically, they are falling to pieces. And if we do not do something about them now, they will literally just disintegrate to the point where we can never fix them. So we're going to spend some money fixing them. And yes, all of this is going to cost money. All of this is going to mean less money coming into the government's coffers. But there are a number of things that are identifiable problems that loads of people are unhappy about in this country. Let's just do something about them.
Hear, hear, Simon. Well done. Rachel, do you want a moment to reflect on the things that you would quite like to see?
Oh, go on then. Indulge me, thanks.
Yeah.
Two things, contradictory. One, I just don't know about these budgets being the point at which everything, all the good stuff comes out the hat. Because what happens, and Osborne, I think, was particularly bad at this, is he wanted the drama, he wanted the excitement, he wanted to be that magician. And so he would not discuss ideas with the cabinet, he wouldn't discuss them with industry, he wouldn't discuss them with the people who they would later affect. And so he'd do it and then work out later what the fallout was. And I think there's a really good argument for not shoving all your good stuff in the budget once a year.
What about getting rid of it altogether?
Well, it's still useful for, and you can do it a bit. And I think that there are things that are sort of less exciting that you could probably have in. I mean, there's every year we have the same old things about fuel duty up or down, et cetera, et cetera. And it's a good time to reflect on the state of the nation's finances and for the Chancellor to address directly the people whose money he is spending. No harm in that. But I think like expecting the big glitz out of budgets all the time is not necessarily that helpful. Then the contradiction, that in mind, I think that we face a lot of issues at the moment. And we'll do over the next few years with whatever happens with Brexit. But I think longer term, there are even more. And they don't necessarily have to be problems. They can also be opportunities. I hate that. It's so naff. But it is true. Now is a good time to look forward as well, to think about green investment, to think about the way that our globe is changing and what the requirements will be of people around the world, and getting ahead in terms of technology, investing in education, in new technologies, in renewable energy. We've just commissioned massive nuclear power station at the same time as the people who are going to be building at EDF have just been told by their own government that perhaps they should start to wean themselves off nuclear. And there's a lot that we could do here, not looking to expertise in other countries, but in investing in our own. And that would create jobs now, investment now, and would be forward-looking as well.
All fantastic ideas. But now it's time to come back down to earth and the actual nitty-gritty and what we're likely to get from this budget. As much as I would love to see some of those things introduced, I'm a little bit more pessimistic, perhaps. Maybe I'll be wrong. But firstly, where politics and economics combine at the moment a lot, the generational divide trying to breach it. Much mentioned, Simon just did it then, but about help for young people, especially to combat the Corbyn appeal. Well, what can we expect here? Perhaps more property, tinkering, student loans, the weird tax thing that they were talking about, see podcast pass or listen to podcast pass. But first, housing. House prices at an estimated 7.6 times the average annual salary. That's more than double what they were 20 years ago. So would-be first-time buyers are being forced to rent with no prospect of being able to afford a place of their own anytime soon. We also have declining sales, currently at the lowest level since October last year. So that's the situation. Can the government do anything about this, or has government interference in the past exacerbated the problem?
Yes, government interference in the past has exacerbated the problem. It's been nobly meant to try and help people buy homes. So the biggest intervention has been the Help to Buy scheme. You had the two Help to Buy schemes. You had Help to Buy, the new build version, which lends people up to 25% of a home, interest-free money for 5 years. And then you had the support for low loan-to-value mortgages. The problem is that if you give people more money, especially if you give people a large sum of interest-free cash in order to buy a home, then you essentially bump up the price of those homes by even more. A more sensible thing with the Help to Buy new build scheme would have been to lend the money to the developers themselves, because that would actually lower the cost of building the homes and mean that they could sell them on for a cheaper price. So I think there is a realisation in that in government now, and I also think that they'd like to do less to be propping up prices and more to be trying to at least stabilise them or bring them down, whilst at the same time not pulling away the assistance. And that's the difficult balancing act they've got to make. So lots of people want Help to Buy extended. We probably won't see it radically changed or hacked back at, but I think we're going to start to see more things to do with the supply of homes. But I mean, that's going to require completely tearing up the planning system and releasing a load of land from the Greenbelt. And there's going to be a huge backlash against that, because nobody trusts the people who plan to build the houses on the Greenbelt. And all the evidence that I've seen from those in-demand areas around London, particularly like where I originally come from out in Hertfordshire, it's pretty fishy what goes on sometimes when you look at the land that gets discussed to be built on in the Greenbelt. And there's lots of things that local people object to, not because they think something suspicious is going on, but because they don't think people are playing a completely straight bat with them, and they don't trust the local authorities and the developers to actually deliver decent homes and the infrastructure that they need. So good luck to Philip Hammond in solving that one in one budget.
Yes, indeed. And he's probably not likely to do so either. But what do you expect? I mean, what are the noises around
about maybe a stamp duty cut. But the problem is that if there is a stamp duty cut, then that stamp duty cut is probably going to be for first-time buyers or people lower down the ladder, lower-value homes, because the perception will be that if you cut stamp duty for higher-value homes, for the homes where people are paying 40 grand's worth of stamp duty on it, well, those are homes that cost nearly £1 million, and that will be seen as a giveaway to the rich, when actually, realistically, it would just probably help the housing market overall. So I don't think you'll see what you need to see to be done there, but you'll probably see the lower rates of stamp duty, perhaps cut or tinkered with slightly.
Rachel, in terms of young people, other sort of policy measures that might come in, anything student loans, are we expecting anything there?
It's going to be a really difficult one to do. He's got to do something for the young people. I think that's a given, just because of the rising popularity of Corbyn and the diminishing number of people, not that there were many in the first place, but certainly the diminishing number of young people who vote Conservative. I mean, an easy one to do would just be to change the interest rate from the higher RPI to the lower CPI rate of inflation for student loans. But I mean, that doesn't really sound very exciting.
But it is a real bugbear, and it's not just student loans, is it? It's also things like train fares as well.
Totally.
Why do they use this?
Well, they pick whichever one seems like it's going to get more money into the pot. It's not fair, but I can't imagine him standing up and saying, and for young people who have had such a hard time these last years, we've decided to change the measure of inflation on their debt from RPI to CPI. He's got to do something that sounds a little bit better than that. But it's really difficult to know now that they've gone down this road, what they can do. I mean, they've said that I think the ceiling for university fees has been frozen for a little bit. But I mean, they're already at, what, £9,250. So what's he going to do? Maybe something for renters, since younger people tend to be more likely to be renting. Something around zero-hour contracts, but again, that's politically sensitive as well. There is not an easy win here.
Simon, anything else that we might expect? And you mentioned pension changes there. I called it low-hanging fruit, I think, in the last podcast.
Pensions have been one of the things that there's been an awful lot of tinkering with recently. And there is a desire not to radically change them again. But there is also a parallel movement talking about pension tax relief. And at the moment, the principle is that you save into your pension from untaxed earnings, from your before-tax wages, and then you then pay tax on the income when you take it out at the other end. So that means that if you pay 20% tax, you get 20% tax relief, 40% you pay, get 40% tax relief, and 45% you get 45% until they start taking it back off you, because you can only put a limited amount of money into your pension. But there is a suggestion that maybe we should just have a flat rate of pension tax relief, say perhaps set only at 20% so that higher rate taxpayers didn't get more, or more likely maybe at 30%. Now, the problem with that is that that completely removes the principle of saving from untaxed earnings. And also there are some logistical issues with it. So if you get your pension via a method called salary sacrifice, you give up a chunk of your salary, then your employer just pays it into your pension instead. Now, if you were to continue doing that, you would continue getting tax relief at your marginal rate of tax. So if you're a 40% taxpayer, you'd continue to get 40% tax relief. So would the government then need to basically knock salary sacrifice on the head completely in order to achieve this? Logistically, it's going to be very difficult. Politically, it might be quite difficult. But it would increase the amount of money going into lower earners' pension pots, which could be sold as something benefiting the young rather than the old.
All right, one on motorists, if you would. Any help here?
Highly unlikely, to be perfectly honest. Potentially, we might even see a tax rise for the more polluting diesel cars. The direction of travel is a continued crackdown on it, and it's seen as a way of pulling in money. And also, I think it's being seen as a way of allowing local authorities to pull in some extra cash. They really shouldn't, when they take in money from parking and parking charges and things like that, local authorities aren't then allowed to spend it on just anything. Mm. But local authorities have seen their budgets cut and the amount of money they get from the government cut, and the government's keen to let them do a bit. And it's kind of passing the buck a little bit on this one. So I think maybe we'll see a bit more of that.
All right, before we go on to business and Brexit, Rachel, there's a lot of hopefuls in amongst what we're talking about here. There's a lot of maybes, he could do this, it might be good to see it. But actually nothing that, I mean, obviously we don't know, but anything tangible?
We've had a few things have been trailed, but all attributed to unknown sources. And it very much feels like each different industry with their own requirements is saying that the Chancellor is likely to do X, Y or Z, with the hope that that puts pressure on him to do so. We've had in the past Chancellors who have been much more keen on leaking content in advance. They'll give one story to each paper, we saw in the old days with Osborne. But there's nothing like that. There's no fanfare. I wonder whether they're still trying to work out, scrambling around, work out what exactly they can do. I will be so impressed if they come up with something exciting, innovative, that keeps everyone happy. I can't wait.
Also, all the papers are rather taken at the moment with Brexit and the like. Talking of which, Simon, anything for Brexit, anything for business, or will the Chancellor hold tight here?
Well, he has made the comment before that he's planning on holding tight on any help for Brexit until the deal is done. So I don't think that we'll see anything being pushed through.
Help for Brexit like? What do we mean?
Well, for example, once the deal is done, we're going to know what the deal looks like, and then there might be some kind of push to get a little bit more money in to help businesses, or give businesses a bit of a tax cut to help them get through the transition process. But I don't think we'll see anything at the moment until a deal is done.
What about national insurance? Small firms, changes to VCTs, dividend tax, all of this, throw it in.
I think Philip Hammond might have got his fingers burnt with the whole national insurance and small businesses last time round, so I don't necessarily think that he'll try and change that. VCTs, venture capital trusts, are a way of investing. You get healthy tax relief with it, and that's meant to cushion the fact that you are investing in early stage companies. There is a bit of a look into this going on at the moment. He could change it. It's probably unlikely that he'll actually change the 30% tax relief that you can get and the interest-free dividends, although he could do, probably more likely that he'll do some kind of structural tinkering with the things that those VCTs are allowed to invest in to make sure that they're investing into sort of more risky early-stage companies. I think that probably the easiest thing for him to do would be to do nothing particular. I think the easiest thing to do would be to stop trying to do this general squeeze on those perceived as wealthier that I think is probably squeezing quite hard at the moment and is starting to get quite unpopular with the way it's squeezing, and maybe do a little bit of talking around how he's going to help younger people and everything and entrepreneurs and things like that, but not really do much at all. And that's my suspicion as to what he'll do, is I don't really think that he'll do much at all.
When you said do nothing, I thought you'd expect him just to kind of stand up there and go, right, that's it, nothing in the box, I'm out. As we were, everybody, as we were. Editor Simon Lambert and personal finance editor Rachel Rickard-Strauss. You can stay up to date with all the latest breaking money news. Just go to thisismoney.co.uk or download the app. And if you like our podcast, why not rate us on iTunes and tell your friends and family.
This is Money, brought to you in partnership with NS&I Premium Bonds, making saving that little bit more exciting.